Today is Thursday. It's August 10th, 2017. It's 11:09 in the morning. And I'm John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast recorded at the studios of WGN Radio. Portions of this broadcast on my Saturday show at 11:10.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on WGN Radio.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, creator of the comic strip Prickly City, and host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
I'm Mark Baser, the host of The Interview Show on WTTW.
We don't have Eric Zorn here. Mark, here's what happens. We all do our parts. Then yeah. Eric is always the last one. He can't be here today, nor can our friend Kristen McQuarrie.
Right.
Zorn describes himself in some moderately self-deprecating but also self-aggrandizing way. It's an art. You do it.
I'm the beautifully lackluster host of the interview show on WTTW.
I mean, we all kind of are over the top, and he's got the TV show.
President Trump has dusted up a fire and fury storm with North Korea. Steve Bertrand, what's the takeaway for you this week about the way the president has been carrying out that kind of diplomacy?
I think it just proves still that the president doesn't understand that his words matter. You know, I mean, he's proven that over and over, that they don't matter to him. He'll say, you know, you are my blood brother one day, and I've never met you the next. The words don't matter to him. And when you're speaking as president of the United States, your words matter. And he hasn't learned that lesson. And so, you know, now Guam is shuddering.
Yeah, well, they'll miss. But Scott Stanis's cartoon shows a mushroom cloud with Trump's hair blowing back in the distance.
Yes, and him saying, Trump havoc, and unleash the dogs of war.
Is that a quote? Are you paraphrasing?
Yeah, no, it's from Julius Caesar, Shakespeare.
If I'm going to plagiarize, I'm going to plagiarize
from the
very. And then wasn't the next line, said a fool, or something like that?
Oh, nicely played, Steve Bertrand.
Thank you. I could be wrong.
Okay,
but
so you're quoting Shakespeare in your cartoon, and there's Trump with a nuclear holocaust in the distance.
Yeah, I mean, Steve is absolutely right. He's president of the United States. When he says something, this isn't some Twitter tiff he's having with a Kardashian. This is serious, serious, serious stuff. And Guam now is quivering. I mean, they did some man-on-the-street interviews yesterday from Guam, and the people are really, really nervous, and they should be. They've got a nut with crazy hair, making
Which
all sorts of
that?
Threats, and then there's Kim Jong-un. you can't do this as president. Do you remember years ago, those of us of a certain age, Ronald Reagan, when he just became president, he was recording his weekly radio address, and he said, he did a mic test. He says, "We're attacking Moscow. The bombs start dropping in 10 minutes. And he caught holy hell for that.
Holy hell.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a big deal.
Yeah. And it should spoke not to, have been. This is a tangent, but he did not deserve that.
No.
Right. But it just spoke to the weight of everything that a president said.
Right. I mean, if on a mic check he says, "Well, we begin bombing in 15 minutes.
But he shouldn't have said, but it was a big mistake to say, because at the time, you know, the Soviets heard that too.
It was a mic check.
Let's not argue this one.
Okay. What about you, Mark Baser?
Well, it just kind of echoing what Scott said, but it's just like things come into his head and he says them. It's usually what I would understand what would happen in an administration. This kind of thing would go through multiple channels. Everybody would meet, they would discuss, they would verify, they would come to an agreement over what had to be said. In this case, it's always the opposite. It's always something pops into his brain. And somebody even showed that the phrase he used, not the fire and fury part, but the world has never seen, is something he says all the time about other things. It's just, this is an automatic thing. He says it. And then afterwards, if you read all the papers today, everybody in the administration is scrambling to either retreat, bring it back, defend him at the same time that they say, don't worry. It's just not the way it's done.
It's a hard day, yeah, for Tillerson and Mattis, because Tillerson was trying to pacify the world, and then Mattis kind of doubled down, saying, that's right. And then there's the president kind of leading the charge, but in two different directions.
Yeah, I think it speaks to a bigger problem, because it's one thing for the president to use words that he hasn't told his secretaries about, or his national security advisor, but then the next day you have the secretary of state going in one direction and the secretary of defense kind of repeating different words, same message that the president said. So even after the first day, they didn't quite get their handle on their message.
Well, because they didn't know what the message is going to be.
No, the
but
arc,
by day two, they should have.
The arc of these things is always the same, though. It's always he says something like this. that's so out there. At first, they say, we don't know. He didn't mean it. And then it goes, oh, yeah, he totally meant it. And then the State Department spokesperson will say, oh, yeah, we were totally on board with this. And the military guys will say, we totally knew this was coming.
Right.
You totally didn't. And the other part of that, you mentioned Secretary of State Tillerson. He was on his way east and refueling in Guam. And can you imagine that
really?
Conversation? Just make it quick.
Did he turn out the lights?
half a tank. We're fine.
That's exactly right.
It's enough. And it's not funny. You keep laughing about it.
I think this is a mountain, and it's not a molehill, but it's not a mountain. We are making too much out of this.
I don't agree because I just think there's such a fine trigger there that it doesn't have to be a nuclear weapon, but a shooting war. It's closer there than anywhere else in the world. And so I feel, even though I laughed about it too, I think it's the most serious thing we're facing right now.
Well, there are two arguments I hear. One is this, that actually the leader of North Korea is a rational actor. That does not mean that he doesn't have terrible problems, but he understands that if he bombs you, he is destroyed.
Saddam Hussein.
Right. He understands that. So that's one thing. The other thing is that people make... And I've seen them on all sides of the political spectrum, actually, is, hey, wait a minute. No other president in the last three presidents didn't solve this problem either. It's just they've pushed it down the hill. And is what Trump said—
By speaking nicely.
Right.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah
by
right.
being diplomatic. Is what Trump said going to, A, not is it effective? I don't think anybody's really arguing it's effective. But is it going to make anything any worse?
Actually, if I could jump in on a historical note— Bill Clinton, people forget this, in his first term, signed a nuclear disarmament agreement with North Korea with virtually the same words that Barack Obama used announcing his agreement with Iran. I think both actors are untrustworthy. Would that be fair to say? Because clearly North Korea now has the bomb. Iran is extremely close. But to say that they weren't engaged, and they're not trustworthy. I'm not sure this guy is that stable. I mean, this is a third generation.
Educated in Switzerland, right? We've got that going for us.
Kim Jong-un?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, so here's the point.
So he knows how the West works. I mean, he's not lived his life on that peninsula.
But stable or not, what do you do with that guy, right? I too often use the analogy of a hornet's nest, but I just don't see the point of whacking it with a stick. I don't know what we get out of it.
What do you think the odds are that... there will be a nuclear war in the next 6 months.
Zero.
Right. Exactly. I agree.
Hold on. Expert trend now. Go ahead.
7%.
How about you, Scott?
Yeah, I'll go with Steve. 7.5%.
So that's basically zero. If you
I didn't say zero. Zero was on the table, and I said seven.
Zero was not seven.
if you said there's a 7% chance of something happening, you'd basically be saying there's not a chance of happening.
Right, but a 7% chance of a thunderstorm is much different than 7% chance of a nuclear war.
Well, but maybe the consequence is greater than, okay, so we're not going to have a nuclear war. So we're what, out of the woods on this? No, actually, I think we've once again diminished the presidency. If nothing else, we've looked silly and feckless. I mean, here's what I don't know how this scenario plays out. But suppose Kim Jong-un does something that isn't a major military strike on Guam. But say they fire some missiles over one of our destroyers, or say they shoot down one of our planes. They've made it sound, the administration, like then fire and fury is now going to come. Nuclear war is going to come. That's the language they're using. So if we say after they do something that isn't a full-scale assault on Guam, and we don't rain fire and fury, we do what? Suspend their academics and freeze their bank accounts? Well, that's the same game we've been playing all along. And now the president looks as ineffective as the other two.
Right. And that's a danger, too. I mean, 6 months into his presidency, one of the knocks against Donald Trump is that he doesn't follow through. His threats are hollow. That's why you have Republican senators and congressmen blowing him off.
That's why you have transgenders in the military still.
Yeah, exactly. He'll say stuff and not follow through because he has the attention span of a six-year-old on a sugar rush. But the danger of that, and he reads this stuff, so he knows the criticism. The danger of all that is this: the critical point where he says, "Well, this one I'm going to do something about. I'm actually going to."
Yeah, I know. It'd be a shame if this is where he drew the line in the sand.
Yeah.
One area where this, where his, I think, behavior comes back to haunt him and us is in regards to China, because China here is the one party who could actually do something about North Korea. Like, they're the trading partner with North Korea. They're the ones that deal with him. And yet, everything Trump did during the campaign was to antagonize China. So the relationship there is not good. And in the past, you could people like Obama or Bush, they could lean on China a little bit more. There was some respect there.
Well, and then the funnier thing, too, is China's response to his tweets of late and also his criticism of China have been, you know, just, you know, to hell with you. You know, we don't care what you think. And but you bring up a great point. He's been his whipping boy. And then he comes back from a summit with the president of China and says, I don't think they're going to be our partners in this fight against
North Korea.
But
China has helped us out on this $1 billion worth of sanctions against North Korea.
And Russia as well.
So you know, the last observation I have, then we'll move on. But at least one thing that the president did not miss an opportunity to do was lie about it when he said, since he's taken office, our nuclear arsenal is bigger and better than ever. You know, this Chicago guy, Stephen Schwartz, who wrote Atomic Audit, I'm sure you've all read that.
Oh, yeah. Said
that I did the audiobook.
And really, it didn't ring true, did it? He's been president for 200 days. He's mostly been focused on golf and health care. And now he tells us that since he's been in office, our nuclear program is the best it's ever been. That doesn't pass the smell test. And this Schwartz guy goes, he hasn't done anything. In fact, it's gotten smaller since he took office because of the de-escalation program that we have under the Obama administration. So nothing is bigger or better.
Well, wasn't the reporting that when Rick Perry was nominated as energy secretary, he didn't realize that it was to oversee nuclear weapons?
That's part of his purview.
Yeah, that he didn't realize that was part of the department? Hey, what's this office?
Ruh-roh. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on. So we're all going to get cavities if we continue to talk about the sugar tax in Cook County. But this week, Toni Preckwinkle said that she was going to, and has since pulled back on that, sue the Illinois Retail Merchants Association, set for $17 million because she said that's what we lost in revenue from the delay on the rollout of the sweet beverage tax.
During the stay, the judge issued a stay while he considered it. Because it didn't go into effect, and they didn't collect that money.
So then the Cook County Board Chair wants the retailers to pay $17 million in because of the revenue they lost.
Well, she did.
She did. She still dropped, does, but they dropped.
She dropped the suit.
Okay, fine. Why are you giving her a pass on this?
I'm not giving her a pass, but she dropped the suit.
I mean, know that, but that's her intent. I just think, what was the purpose of
that? Did she wake up and realize there's a First Amendment?
I think the judge was, well, you
First
Amendment.
You ought to be able to protest something,
wait,
right?
Protest. There's a judiciary. I mean, yes. She should have sued the Cook County Judiciary because they're the ones who put the tax on hold.
Well, why? She shouldn't have had the damn tax in the first place.
Okay,
well.
That ship has sailed, Scott.
No, maybe not.
No, you know,
they're
still back.
They're still running ads. If you listen to the radio station, they're still running ads against it, and yeah. I'm not quite sure.
Well, the Tribune editorial today, which I think is kind of ridiculous, said, Madam President, bring this wall down. Abolish the soda tax. Cook County officials went too far with this revenue grab, and voters know it. And then they cite surveys where they go, it's a really unpopular tax. We would have no taxes if we got rid of all the unpopular taxes and fees.
I saw a receipt, and I think it was from Orland Park, of a guy who, and the point of his receipt was that he was wrongly taxed for a bottle of Dasani water.
Yeah.
But this guy bought orange juice and Dasani. And under each of the items, you know, orange juice, Dasani, it said Cook County sweetened tax, words to that effect.
Yeah.
So that they're printing not just your sales tax or tax, but exactly what this tax is on each bottle.
People are suing. They're suing 7-Eleven for a 2 cents overcharge.
And Walgreens.
But think of it. When you purchase something, it doesn't break down your different taxes.
What's your point about that?
Well, I think it's just interesting or kind of funny that the retailers are putting, you know, not just tax, you're the Cook County sweetened beverage tax.
Oh, they want you to know.
Right. I don't think there's any problem with truth in advertising receipts. That's okay. Don't you think they're suing the wrong people when you sue 7-Eleven and Walgreens?
Well, here's my question to you guys, too, is why this tax? I mean, this is the most overly tax part of the country. But I mean, seriously,
he's not
gonna
let it go.
I know he's
going
to keep going back. Let's just let him go.
But do you think there should be taxes on cigarettes?
I'm not a big tax fan, so you're asking the wrong guy.
Do you like roads?
No. Don't. I'm
say
not
going
yes. to. Yes, I like roads. But my point is, why this tax is the one that we're all talking about? Why is this the one that
because it's impossible
mass,
to
shiny
understand.
And new.
And it's impossible to understand.
By the way, last week you said that it's like $12 to $14 for a package of cigarettes.
It's $14.50, yeah.
I looked it up, and you're about right. Depends on where you buy and what you buy, but I'm stunned that
Scott's
pack of
right.
smokes costs over $10.
It's like you're married to him, though. You're not right until he checks it out.
It's not 1973 in the lot of the 7-Eleven where you grew up smoking after a high school party?
I don't know what you're saying, Mark. All I'm saying is that I think that it is unfair to pick on an easy-to-pick-on group and say you pick up the tab because you're addicted to something. Thank God they are. I made this point last week. I just think that's unfair to those people.
Well, one of the problems with these taxes, and this is probably not – maybe this is, Scott, your argument, but it's also not a progressive tax, right? It's the same tax on whether you're rich or poor.
That and I'm also – I mean, it's also – no one is buying the "this is for your health" argument. No one. No reasonable person is buying that.
That was part of the Tribune's editorial. Did you write the Tribune editorial?
I did not, but I sat in on it.
Okay, yeah, but
I'm on the editorial board.
I want to go on the record as saying I like the tax, and it will be worked out in no time at all. This is like everybody goes crazy at the beginning when something's rolled out and there's problems. But
no,
nobody
but
will give it time.
This is also a hefty – it's a hefty tax. I mean,
I'd like to go on the record and say that I support Mark. on almost everything, but not quite this.
You don't like the tax?
No, I do.
Well, but
neither of you guys
are big sweet beverage
drinkers.
How
many big gulps are you drinking a day?
I drink Diet Coke, you know.
So you're in the clear.
No, I'm taxed.
No,
it's
that's sweetened.
Welcome to the law.
Why don't you guys just drink water?
What I don't like, because sometimes that's sweetened. What I don't like is it's confusing. I think, you know, Preckwinkle says that you have to pay for government. She says good government. I think you have to pay for all government. So the taxes have to come from somewhere. And I am not opposed to taxing things that are not good for you, like cigarettes or like, you know, high sugary drinks.
So they should tax hamburgers, French fries.
Maybe, yeah, if we need to. Pizza, not cheese is fine, but too many meats.
What
after
if they
six
tax
meats?
The super big gulp, but not the big gulp.
If you right, okay, maybe
that'd
because
be fair.
If you've got to get the
it's
money,
quantity that
if you've got to get the money in one way or another, why not also get the money that is involved
that's
a little
New York
social
did,
engineering?
Right? New York did the quantity tax.
Sure.
Well, yeah, that was the nanny tax there too. The fact is that that Cook County is not taxing at a low rate. Remember when Toni Preckwinkle ran the first time, and she ran because she ran against the Strowger tax, which she struck down, and over the period of time has brought back and then some. So you know that we're not.
Well,
under
it's
tax
funny
here.
Now. Boykin, the West Side Commissioner Richard Boykin, is talking about running against her because of the sweetened beverage tax. She won against Todd Strowger because of the increased sales tax.
And he's a Democrat, but he's got the Republicans. He has Republican support, as I understand it, too.
Well, if he could beat Toni Preckwinkle, I think they'd line up behind him, yeah.
All three Republicans.
By the way, does anybody have anything wise to say about the Taylor Swift suit? I'm a little surprised. I actually think we're making way too much out of the North Korea-Trump thing. I think we're also making... And I'm not comparing them, although I am. I think we're making too much out of the Taylor Swift.
Okay, I don't think we are because I think she's one of the country's top entertainers. She's an innovative person when it comes to the business side of it. She is a big figure. She's also a woman who had her, to use her words, ass grabbed. And she was being sued for it. The guy lost his job because she complained, and he sued her. And now she's coming back and saying, no, this is what happened. I'm suing you back for a buck. Just to prove that I can. No, I think in the world of business and women in business, it is a significant story. We were laughing because as we sit here, she just left the witness stand less than an hour ago, and she talked about her ass cheeks and ass grab. My ass is in my back. He got a handful full of my ass, and I'm sure we'll read more about it in the coming hours, but I was just struck by that. By
she's
those,
a person
those
who doesn't
terms.
Cuss in her songs either. Actually, has a pretty clean
persona.
Well,
I'm just surprised the judge allowed it because the judges, you know, are pretty strict about what they allow to be said in their courtroom. It clearly was a strategy for her. I mean, I'm sure she didn't want to say anything that would make it seem less offensive.
Right. So, butt maybe is
butt, bottom, derriere. None of those have the impact on the jury.
Soft description. Ass is a little harder or harsher.
I don't know I mean, I think she's probably going to win. I don't know how it works, but it was kind of jarring.
It just seems to me
that.
Like, you know, that's an interesting point, Steve, because we hear $3 million. She's not suing him for $3 million.
No.
He's suing her because of what he perceives as lost revenue, et cetera. But it just seems to me like if we're taking our picture and you put your hand down there and I slap it, or I don't know how that should play out, But I don't think it should come to this. I don't know that a guy should lose his job over it. I don't know that $3 million should be at stake either way. I don't know that it should be a national court case
I think
or controversy.
Women, I think women in this culture face this kind of crap all the time. And I think that the fact that she's bringing this up and making a case out of it, I think, is important. But I want to go on record by this way, say Taylor Swift ass grab, great band name, dibs.
Fine, you got it.
You'll probably get sued.
You know, though, when you see the picture, you do get the sort of image that he's like, boy, am I going to have a great story to tell. I'm going to put my hand right up here. I'm going to squeeze her bum.
Right.
And then I'll be able to say that, maybe on the radio, maybe to friends. But, boy, will I have a great moment. And
would have a greater impact if you said grab her ass. Grab her bum doesn't work.
I guess. And, by golly, he's got a great story to tell. He, you know... He's in court today over that.
I'm not sure how you defend it. I really don't. I mean,
no, you can't do
it's
that.
It's grotesque.
Yeah. I don't. In terms of the money, I mean, every time you hear about a lawsuit, it's always for an amount of money that makes no logical sense in comparison to the... I mean, remember when the woman spilled coffee on herself and then she
McDonald's?
Sued for millions and millions of dollars? Right. I mean, what did she have to do?
It's just weird. I
mean, be careful. The anecdotes around that, a lot of them aren't true.
I don't care.
Yeah, no.
For the point of this conversation, they
I've
are.
Looked into that story before.
Yeah.
She didn't, you know, she was third-degree burns. It was really severe. They poured a whole hot thing of coffee on her. And the only way to get McDonald's to behave, to stop serving 200-degree coffee to people through windows, is to hit them where it hurts, to say, oh, well, okay, so what's her doctor bill? $5,000? Here's $10,000. No, you need to sue for a lot. That's the way those sorts
of
things work.
And that was the recourse, and that's the one they took, and McDonald's finally learned their lesson.
Yeah. So maybe this is the same thing, that men will keep doing this kind of junk unless you
fire him or, humiliate them or make a national case out of it. Our recommendations for the week, things that we are watching, listening to, reading, or consuming that we want to recommend to our listeners. Steve, you've been going first.
I'll re-recommend one, just given Glenn Campbell's death this week. I've been talking about it a lot all week, but the documentary I'll Be Me was made about his final, and I always get the name wrong, but I'm pretty confident it's I'll Be Me, about his final concert tour. It came through Ravinia here, and it came while he was dealing pretty severely with Alzheimer's. And it's just a great movie, sort of an appreciation of him, but it does something kind of, I think, that I'm drawn to, in that it shows this guy who was a megastar, but it also shows him as a very bare-bones sort of just a human being, so a real shared experience that we all have. We see a lot of experiences we would never share, and then we see a lot that we really do. And it's just a great accounting, I think, of Glenn Campbell and Alzheimer's. I'll Be Me.
Yeah, nicely, well put. I tweeted last night, am I the only one listening to the Glenn Campbell station on Spotify right now? Because that's all I did when I got home.
And as he did, I'm texting him, and I'm watching Wichita Lineman, four different videos from different decades.
How about you, Scott?
Two things. Firstly, we lost a great cartoonist, but also a great man this week. Dick Locher was the editorial cartoonist at the Chicago Tribune for a number of years, won the Pulitzer Prize in the 1980s, also took over Dick Tracy, drew that for 30, and wrote it for 30 years.
Wow.
He passed away. So if you get a chance, go online, Dick Locher, L-O-C-H-E-R, and check out his work. He's been off staff here since just before I got here 9 years ago. So that's one, and just think, well, Dick, he was a gentleman, and how many of those do you run into in your lifetime, truly? Besides, you know, John Williams, of course, Mark. Yeah. But the other one is Beyond Infinity is a book written by Eugenia Chang, and she's, full disclosure, she was a guest on Patty Vasquez's show when I was there, and it's an expedition to the outer limits of mathematics. Now, I'm a math agnostic. I'm not entirely convinced it exists. So I'm reading this book to try to understand math.
And what's the name of the book?
Beyond Infinity, and it talks about the concept of infinity. I'm about halfway through it, and it already blows my mind how, you know, because we all think we know what a word means. And when you start breaking it down mathematically, well, you don't. And so it's a fascinating, fascinating book. Beyond Infinity by Eugenia Chang, C-H-E-N-G.
I just pulled that up. I actually have that book.
Do you?
I haven't read it, which maybe is more
important. It's on the nightstand, so I get through a chapter, and I just, you know, that's about as far as I can go.
Mark, I'll go next. My recommendation is a website. It's called musicandmemory.org. Speaking of Glenn Campbell, there's an organization that tries to get listening devices. Does anybody have an iPod left anymore and headphones? But they get listening devices of various descriptions to very old people who suffer dementia and Alzheimer's. And when they put the right mix of music on, personal music to them, often the music of their youth, maybe if they were in the service, maybe it's military music and marches that resonate with them, they come to life. Oh, my God, they become animated. They talk.
Really?
Their posture changes. And it's a fascinating movie that was made about it and a very interesting ongoing project. It's called musicandmemory.org. And the TV show I want to re-recommend is Ozark. We've been plowing through that, and oh, my God.
Is that still good?
It is, yeah, right. I'd only seen an episode or two. Last time I recommended it, we're almost done with the series. And it's set a little bit in Chicago, mostly in the Ozarks. It's about a guy that's laundering drug money and what happens to him and his family.
Is it depressing, though?
Yeah. Well, it's not an upper, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Is it gripping and compelling? Is Jason Bateman awesome? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you like?
My favorite band, The National, has a new record coming out in about a month, and they've already released 3 songs, and as I get older, and this is a fault of mine, I don't get excited enough about new music that comes out, and when I do, it's like a reason for celebration.
Yeah. Boy, good for you, because I'm still waiting for Steely Dan to come out with another. If Karen Carpenter would just put out one more record, I'd be the happiest man in the studio. But I guess that's not going to happen either. The National. A new album?
The System Only Dreams in Total Darkness.
How about that? Mark Baser, thanks for coming in. Scott Stantis, Steve Bertrand has already exited stage left. He's getting ready for his noontime show on WGN Radio. Ben Cortez, thank you for engineering. And this show is produced, or this podcast is produced by Elif Garris. I'm John Williams, and we'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on the John Williams Show on WGN Radio.